Good morning and welcome to Hometown Alaska. I'm your host, Kathleen McCoy. Here we are in the ebbing days of 2021, just hours away from the solstice and the slow return of Alaska's brilliant light. It's a time to reflect on our year, and it has been a difficult one with divisiveness and confusion and loss. I wonder if you feel like I do, a little spent. So I wanted to find a topic for today's program that was restorative, soothing, something that reminded us of better times, closer connections, and I landed on food, an unspoken expression of our love and affection for those close to us, whether it's a large holiday dinner or a simple supper prepared for those you love. When I described this notion to people around me, the idea resonated, so I went with it. Here to help us ruminate on good food and warm gatherings is my pop-up co-host, Chef Judith Mack. Judith, welcome to Hometown Alaska.
Thank you, Kathleen. This is going to be really fun today.
I think it's going to be really fun. I was unsure of it as a topic, and the more people I talked to, the more people said, yes, give us some relief. Talk to us about something that works.
And we love our food, so this is absolutely perfect.
Right. I agree. And I want to say to our listeners that Judith, you may know her. She's been in Anchorage a long time. She teaches at the UAA Culinary School, Culinary and Hospitality School, teaches cuisines from around the world, traveled all around the world to research these cuisines, and has been cooking and cooking for years. But she also has family stories, and we're going to hear some of those today. So, Judith, I'm really happy you're here. I don't think I could do this on my own. I mean, I have family stories, too, but I'm a novice cook, you know, and so I wanted to get someone who really knew what they were doing. We also, throughout the hour, we have some guests planned to call in who are members of our community who really resonated with this idea as well, who listened to me on the phone and said, yes, I do want to talk about that. So we have several guests, and I'm going to keep them a secret for the moment, but they're going to pop up throughout the hour. And I also want to send our listeners to our webpage at hometown. It's actually alaskapublic.org/hometown, just because we have some resources there, including something Judith and I are going to talk about, which is a recipe. But also we have, you know, essays. We have an interesting podcast with a cookbook author. Her book is called Soul Food Love. And she talks about just interesting ways in which food is so important to nourish us and to bring us together. So check out that page. There's a few resources for you there. And also, I really hope that we're going to hear from our listeners today. This is one of those topics that everybody actually can be an expert on if they like to eat. So, you know, what did your mom or your grandma cook for you when you were little? What do you cook for your friends or family when you want to express how much you love them? And you don't do it in words, you do it with food. So let me just give you our phone numbers and let you know how to communicate with us today. If you're in Anchorage, the number is 550-8433. Statewide, the number is 1-888-353-5752. And you can always email us at hometown@alaskapublic.org. Okay, Judith, let's get started. Do you want to talk about the fig cookies right off the bat?
Sure, we can. But first of all, I wanted to tell you that my Uncle Tony, who took over the cooking from his wife who had a stroke, told me in his 80s, if you can read, you can cook. And I totally believe that. I don't believe there's any novice cooks out there. If you can read, you can cook.
Okay.
So we'll take it from there. Everybody should be cooking.
Yes. Yes. Don't miss out. Yes. Cook. Yeah.
Okay, so in our family, we have a tradition, and most Southern Italian families make cucciadotti for Christmas time. And this is just like not your mama's Fig Newton cookie. It's a fig cookie with lots of booze in it. It's got lots of bourbon. And I have mine with Grand Marnier, dried figs, walnuts, orange peel, lots of spices. It's just fabulous, and it's wrapped up in this very nice pastry dough and baked. Cut at an angle, frosted, and then has sprinkles on it. So it's very exact what you have to do for this, for presentation. And I make them every year. I have just wonderful memories of it. I've kind of tweaked my mom's recipe, and it's just something that I look forward to every year, is making the cucciadotti.
And do you carry it around and deliver it to people? I think I got one once.
Yes, you did. In the past years, I've done big productions with lots of friends and family members. This past year, I don't have so many people around me, so my production was a little bit lower. So you may be getting some as well. I'm not quite done with my cucciadotti.
Oh, don't worry. I'm not. Absolutely. I'm not saying, hey, where's my cucciadotti?
But, well, I know that your husband's Italian, so I always like to bring it to anybody that's Italian.
Right.
And it's a very regional recipe, because I've spoken to people in the north of Italy. Their family from the north of Italy, and they have never heard of it. So it's the south. And I think that's because it's warmer in the south. They grow figs there. And I think that's probably why it's more popular with Sicilians and southern Italians.
And if you're listening, we have the recipe on our website. And so if you're inspired by Judith, you can actually make them. Would you say they're hard to make?
There's a little bit of a technique. The main thing is making sure you cut them at a consistent size. So I always just lay two fingers down as I'm cutting, and so that they're measured. It's a little bit of a technique. Yes, you have to grind the figs and the raisins and the walnuts, and it's expensive because it uses almost 2 cups of whiskey or brandy and some Grand Marnier. So, it's kind of a treat. To have them, that's why we probably only make them once a year. I don't think they're particularly hard. There's a little bit of a technique to it, though, that I think you could master.
Well, how does it make you feel when you deliver them, or you welcome friends into your house and you've got this thing that took some time and effort to make? Do you feel like it is that expression of, love without words, How does it make you feel when you're making them and giving them?
Absolutely. What it does is give me great pride of my Italian heritage, which in Alaska, there's not a lot of Italians here, but in my hometown of Buffalo, New York, there's many Italians there. And so it just kind of reminds me, yes, I'm an Italian woman.
Yeah.
And this is a food that shows that I am Italian. So, and it's made with a lot of love. I love to make them. It's kind of my specialty. And my good friend Tim Dobler and I actually tweaked the recipe to perfection. We feel like it's perfection now.
What did you do? Was it that you changed the dough a little, or you added a little more whiskey, or what?
That's exactly what we did. We added more whiskey, and then we added Grand Marnier, which, of course, my mother wouldn't do that. She would make it simpler.
Yeah.
But yes. And, more orange peel, and just kind of up the spices a little bit. So it's tweaked very, very nicely, and not your mama's Fig Newton.
Well, you mentioned that my husband is Italian. He is, and he has a cousin that loves to bake, and we have gotten boxes from her at Christmas with, oh my goodness, different kinds of cookies, things that she calls grandma's cookies, and a cake, and you open that box and you just feel rich. And we have to put it we have to stagger the consumption, because there's so much that comes through, and we freeze it and then take it out and eat it a little bit at a time. But it's almost as if she's there with you when you are having some of her special foods that she sends to you. So it's very heartwarming, and I'm going to get to meet her for the first time. I'm going to get to go visit her, and she's like, I'm cooking for you.
Oh, wow. It would be so good if you got some of her recipes.
Yes.
To pass on, particularly the cookie recipes, because there's so many Italian cookies. And in the past, I've made a lot of different ones, but just this year, I've just focused on the cucciadotti.
I remember visiting my husband's family in the Bronx and going to the corner bakery and this glass case loaded with all different kinds of sweets, cannolis, and all kinds of just, you know, tray after tray after tray. And people would get these pink boxes filled with the things they were going to take to their family, wrapped with string, and out the door they go, you know, and long lines, you know, especially at the holidays, and just very, very lovely. And everybody inside knowing exactly what they were doing, the people behind the counter really competent. So, yeah. So food is love. Yeah, it is. It is. I'm very lucky to have those experiences and those people in my life. So, you know, I have thought of my own family stories. I'll tell one. So my brother and I live up here in Alaska, and my parents were down in San Diego. And my mother, who was a retired nurse, was sure that we were going to get scurvy because we weren't going to have enough sunlight and we weren't going to have enough fresh fruit. And it's just, you know, I don't know how you do it up there. So she got into her head. She had a Meyer lemon tree in her backyard that was super productive. And so she would mail us these big boxes of Meyer lemons. Each of us would get, you know, 25 or 30 of them. And so we needed to develop recipes, you know, that would take advantage of these beautiful lemons. And so my brother, you know, found a recipe for a lemon tart, and that we have made that year in and year out, sometimes all year long, you know, but it's become like a tradition in our family to have this lemon tart. It's really rich, and it's like having sunshine, you know. It's so lemony and smooth and buttery. So, you know, that's how some stories begin, some family stories begin. And, you know, in my family, my mom, like I said, she was a working nurse and didn't particularly enjoy cooking. It was one of those maintenance duties that she felt she had. My dad, who, you know, was a more relaxed person, was more willing to just be in the kitchen and cook. So he, I remember one of his favorite things. It was a labor of love because it wasn't super complicated, but he liked the work of doing it, which was grating lots of cabbage by hand on a box grater, you know, for a long time. And then I think salting it and soaking it. And then what he was aiming for was coleslaw, but the kind of coleslaw that he liked, which had lots of mayonnaise, lots of green peppers, lots of pepper, and big green pepper rings sitting on top. And he just loved to make it and loved to eat it. And that was always, when that was coming, we knew we were having something kind of special. So,
Nice memories. Very nice. I would love to have a taste of that lemon tart. That sounds fabulous.
Guaranteed. I've gotten good at making it. I don't feel incompetent about the lemon tart. So, Oh, hello, Omid. Hello.
I'm here.
Oh, I know you're there, Judith, and we have Omid Rahmanian, who is one of our guests for the show. And we can see that he's on the line, but we're trying to get him connected into the studio. So I'll tell you a little bit about Omid. Do you know Omid? I'm not sure if you do, Judith.
No, I don't.
Okay. So he, there was, I actually wanted to give a shout out to Keys to Life, I think it is, of Alaska, which is how I met Omid. My friend Shirley Staten, who helped me find some of the people for today's show, because she very much understands food and connection, and I wanted to say thank you to her. But I came to a class that Omid taught, Persian food, where he and his wife Parisa were cooking in a sort of a community kitchen in the basement of a church, and all the tables were filled with people, and they were going to watch Omid and Parisa cook, and then you know, and walk us through the recipes while they cooked, and then at the end, when everything was done, everyone ate together. And there is really just kind of a transformation that happens when you sit with people and you eat and then you talk or you share. And so anyway, that's Omid, and he is actually in real life, a chiropractor in Wrangell and in Anchorage. So he's calling us from Wrangell. I wonder if that's why we're having a challenge to get him on the air. But, you know, so he's going to tell us a story, and I won't give it away, but he calls it 3D dinners that he and his family have, 3D dinners. And, you know, these D's stand for different things. And I'm going to let Omid tell the story, but it reminded me of a gathering I was just at where it was a Christmas gathering, and people brought different things, kind of a potluck. And then everyone gathered around in the living room and were sitting there, and people offered up poems. They were Christmas poems. Some people wrote their poems. Some people just read someone's famous poem. And, you know, you went around the room, and it takes time. And everyone's sitting and listening and maybe having a glass of wine. And, you know, someone finishes, and people react to the poem and talk a little bit about it. And then you go on to the next one. And so, you know, an hour can go by, and everybody has shared. And then in the end, you know, you sort of feel more connected. You know something about the hey, we have Omid. Hi.
Hello. Hi. How's it going, Natalie?
We are so happy to hear your voice. We have a wonderful audio engineer that has been sweating bullets in the little office there where the soundboard is, just working to get you on the air. And I know you're calling from Wrangell, and it may be hard. But anyway, you're here with Judith Mack, who is a chef and a person who cooks Italian cuisine of her own and also teaches lots of cuisines. But anyway, Omid, I was not giving away your story, but
I can't wait to meet you, Judith. Yes.
Yes, I'm interested to hear it too.
Yes. So, Omid, let's see. So our audience knows a little bit about you. I know you came here in the U.S. in like 1979. But the thing that I remember when we talked before the show was that your mother sent you, you know, to America from Iran with recipes for survival. And the one you told me about was, you know, yogurt. So you could always make your own yogurt because a mother knows you need yogurt, right? And also you said to me, but I'm just an apprentice in the kitchen. You know, I have my mother's recipes, but I stand beside my wife, Parisa. And I told our audience that you were teaching a cooking class when I first saw you and your wife taught together. And so when I reached out to you, you said, you really should have Parisa here. Parisa is a dentist and has patients right now, so she can't talk with us. So it falls to you, Omid, to tell us about, first tell us about your 3D dinners.
Absolutely. Yes. Yes. Thank you for having me. This is just fantastic. You know, what happens is that, of course, Shirley, you know how I got to know Shirley, and we got that whole cuisine thing going. But then regarding the 3D night, you know, we've been having, since we came to Alaska, we always loved having company and people and friends over and share with them our cultural cuisine, the Persian cuisine, and so on. And so we decided that, okay, a night like that, to be really further enriched, we cannot add extra spices. We have to add extra section to the program. So we called it 3D night, which was dinner, devotion, and discover. So basically, people will come, and I think, Judith mentioned about, I heard that it's like a labor of love when you are cooking, and it's interesting that the labor of love has love in its bedrock, right? Mm-hmm. So I think that has been our thing that we would, because of our love for humanity and seeing no strangers and regarding everyone as members of one family, as Abdu'l-Bahá taught us, what happened was that when we have people over, it was with that eager expectation that which family member we are going to meet that we have not met yet. And these people will come. At one night, we had almost 11 countries represented. And that was, you know, anywhere from 8 to 11 countries and faith and no faith and, you know. Mm-hmm. And it was just incredible to just come break bread and share with them Persian rice, you know, our cooking. And Parisa would make an amazing dish and cuisine. And people would also bring some cultural food, so that one of our guests at one point, Kathleen, mentioned that, hey, what's going on here? We cannot have all these different nationalities under one room, and they are all in peace. How could that be possible? Mm-hmm. And so that, you know, I think it was an amazing realization for those who come, and also for us, that we wanted to then, after having the, you know, mingling and getting to know new friends and so on, eat and then go into devotional, say Thanksgiving prayers, to really appreciate all that we have and give the honor, right, you know, to the manufacturer who brought us to the world, right? And so then we wanted to do discover, which means that, okay, having gone through some of the chants, could have been from Hindi chants or from Persian chant or from South America or Alaska Native chant and prayers and so on, how did that move our heart? Mm. And then people will share what happened and what is their thought about maybe various topics. Yes, go ahead.
You know, we need to take a tiny break here, but so hang on, Judith, and hang on, Omid. Mm-hmm. We'll be right back, and you're listening to Hometown Alaska. This is Kathleen McCoy.
You're listening to Hometown Alaska from Alaska Public Media. For more information about this episode, visit us online at alaskapublic.org.
The conversations you hear on Hometown Alaska are focused on the needs and voices of Alaskans, and the generosity of Alaskans brings them to you. Join your neighbors and become a member of your public radio station today.
Welcome back to Hometown Alaska. I'm your host, Kathleen McCoy, joined today with my pop-up co-host, I like to say, Judith Mack, who's a chef and loves to cook her own cultural cuisine from Italy, but also teaches cooking at UAA and travels the world and finds lots about cuisines around the world. And we also still have Omid Rachmanian with us, who's calling in from Wrangell. He was telling a story about his family's 3D dinners. And, you know, I was telling Omid before you joined us that it reminded me so much of holiday parties that I have, you know, one that in particular I was just at, where we ate, we read poems, and then, you know, people felt like they knew something about each other and that you had revealed something, and that, there is a kind of discovery, because, you know, you listen, you get a window into that person, and then you're still sitting there and you feel as if you have discovered something. So and I guess in the end, there's just a kind of a warmth and a connection. And it begins with the food, right? that warms us up. And yes, yes. So, you know, Omid, I'm going to have to.
So much that's true.
It is. It is around the world, which is why I wanted to have a show like this, because we could all relate to it. You know, we may feel like we've got so many differences, but, you know, we can recognize how a full belly and sitting with friends can make us feel well and make us feel energetic and ready to take on, you know, the burdens of the world again. So, but Omid, I'm going to say goodbye because I see that our next guest caller, Zoe, is on the line. And so we're going to say goodbye to you so much. Is there anything you want to leave us with quickly, Omid?
No, I think it is just how much food is love in action. Mm-hmm. Once you love, you do it through the food. And then once you recognize that people can be from all faith and race and all, and yet we are all one, that we are having touched those precious points of unity and commonality. So much success to what you're doing. Thank you. And can't wait to have a cuisine from Judah.
That sounds like
a
request, right? Let's all get together and eat. So, Omid, thank you so much. I know you took time out of a very busy schedule, and I'm so grateful that we could share your voice and your story with our listeners today. So thank you so much.
Yeah. Thank you, Omid.
My pleasure.
Take care. Judith, any comments? We're gonna welcome Zoe on in a moment, but does anything from what we talked with Omid just pop into your head, or should we just jump in and go to Zoe?
Well, I totally agreed with everything he said, and it spoke to me. So I have no comment except that I totally agree with his statement.
Do you wish that you could have some Persian food?
I love Persian food. Yes,
yeah.
I absolutely do.
We would be talking lamb. Would we be talking rice, saffron? What would we be talking about?
Well, I would like to master their rice that has the crunchy bottom.
Ah.
That's what I read the most about. And that's the one thing that I would really like to try to make.
Ah, well, maybe you guys got to get together then. So, all right.
Yes.
Well, I want to welcome Zoe Marudas. Hi, Zoe.
Hello, dear Kathleen Moore. Hello, dear Judith.
Good morning.
Hi, Zoe.
Good morning and Merry Christmas.
Almost.
Yes. Happy holidays to all.
Yes. And, you know, to our listeners, let me let you know that these wonderful guests, none of them are in the studio. Even the co-host, Judith, is in her home office. We don't, because of COVID, we don't have guests in the studio. And it's pretty challenging to have a conversation when you can't see each other's face. But people rise to the challenge. And I'm just really happy that we can share some of these stories. So, Zoe, in case people don't know you, they probably do. But the Pizza Olympia is famous in this town as a place where families dine together, and the children of the chefs are often in the dining room with the guests. And now you are the CEO of Bambino Baby Food. And I learned the other day that you are also a baker of, you know, wonderful holiday bread, Greek seasoned holiday bread and also some sweet bread. So you're very, very busy, very entrepreneurial. But I would love to hear from you on this topic of food as love and you know, how it works in your life.
Thank you, my dear. It's, I think from when we look at food is life. It is nurturing. It connects us. It is our medicine. It is our prevention. It is our bonding. Mm-hmm. It is everything, you know, it is the source of our foundation. Without food, there's a big hole, something great missing, you know. When we're talking about families healing and everything like that, I've been raised in the restaurant where, you know, my family was like everything that we cooked at Pizza Olympia, it was what we would cook for our own families. And then when I went off to medicine, to study medicine, I saw that during my medical rotations, there was a big miss in our families that we were taking care of when they were in the hospital, that the food did not represent healing. It did not represent love. It was just a part of the day. And when you think about food as healing, you know, that and the food doesn't taste good at the hospital or things like that, how can you expect a loved one to recover or gain their strength faster and things like that? So when I founded Bambino's, I thought the incorporation of all of those from the most beautiful ingredients, the most nutritious ingredients, the purity of the ingredients, the recipes, you know, that span the Mediterranean, coming to Alaska, all of that, you know, with our abundance of resources that we have in Alaska, from the most organic, most nutritious soil that we have, because it's untouched by pesticides and herbicides, you know, so we have really sweet vegetables because of the long duration of the sun in the summertime.
Mm.
We have the most abundance, most delicious salmon, halibut, the seafood, you know,
mm-hmm.
and things like that. And just saying all these wonderful ingredients makes one's mouth water.
Yes, I haven't had any breakfast yet. Yeah. Yeah, yeah.
So incorporating all of that and bringing it together in this harmony that we are talking about, gathering families around the table, getting children involved, you know, to cook, not just for the holidays, but throughout the season.
Mm. It's phenomenal. You've been doing that with the, tell us about your venture into the school district.
Yes. So I, you know, Bambinos is for little ones, 5 months to 3 months. And I said, wait a minute, there is another gap that we need to fill in. And that's our children, you know, in elementary school. That's, you know, this is the most important time that they're going to learn recipes and bond with their parents even more and share more of getting these ages, you know, to learn how to cook and to love on food and know where their food is coming from. So I reached out to a couple of Title I schools, and I said, I would love to come and volunteer. I'll prepare a ready meal and then bring all the raw ingredients and share to the children, you know, where the food comes mm-hmm. from, how it's processed, how it's harvested, the nourishment that it provides, many times the distances that it comes from, and from that create a budget-friendly recipes that the children can tweak. You know, make from one recipe, you know, tweak it a little bit, and you have three different recipes. And, you know, make it there in front of them during class, and they're participating, which is the most exciting and most fun. And then at the end, we raffle off the meal we prepared.
Mm.
And we get to taste what they would have baked at home, you know, from the ready meal, and mm-hmm. see their sweet faces. And they're like, mm-hmm. oh, I can taste the lemon. Ooh, that's rosemary. I remember that because you just talked about it, you know, or think of how it changed or mm-hmm. things like that. It's really, really fun and exciting. And then I have heard, you know, many of the parents don't know that I'm coming to the schools. And getting the feedback from parents is amazing. They say, Zoe, I just wanted to say, you know, they'll call it Bambinos. And they say, my daughter came in and she baked, you know, she cooked dinner today. She was a part of it, you know, and I was exhausted from work. Or another one, you know, another parent says, my son came in and started peeling potatoes, and he had never seen him peel potatoes before. You know, where did mm-hmm. you learn that skill?
Mm-hmm.
You
know? And it,
or just simple, fun things like that.
Right. It's so true that when food comes packaged, you know, you don't really even know what it comes from. For example, meat, you know, you don't know that, you know, there was a cow or there was a pig or, you know, even that it was a full fish, you know, at one time. But you're just used to seeing mm-hmm. this chunk that was mm-hmm. prepared. And so seeing where food comes from and also kind of understanding that it matters that it comes from clean, you know, unmolested waters, unmolested earth, you know, that it has the full nutritional value. So, you know, Zoe, did you grow up cooking at your mother's knee? Are you taking what you learned from your own family and taking it into the schools and trying to encourage families to do this?
Yes, most definitely. My parents were organic farmers in Greece. We still have our farms. We have a beautiful olive grove that we harvest yearly and take care of. And my father was my biggest foundation of, if you don't take care of the earth, it will not take care of you,
mm-hmm.
and vice versa. So it was the mm-hmm. same way, you know, that, you know, we use the word organic so loosely in America. In many other countries, it's traditional, meaning traditional mm-hmm. is not altered by common
mm-hmm.
science and technology. You know, because we've been farming for thousands of years.
Well, it seems that, that we, when we industrialized our food processes after World War II. And I remember talking to a scientist about this. He said it was envisioned as a good thing. No one will be hungry again. We will mass produce food. But then, you know, the quality of the food changed, and just what's gone on with corn in the country, you know. So it's almost like we're turning more toward the small scale, you know, almost like the farmer's market. Yeah. And knowing where your food comes from, maybe even knowing, you know, the person that grew it or the fisherman that caught it, you know, it's almost like, you know, I appreciate the idea that no one should ever be hungry, and that was the idea behind it. But when I say to myself, do we need 40 flavors of Doritos? You know, you know, I mean, but that creativity went in that direction as opposed to, you know, wholesomeness or you know,
Fresh food.
Yeah. So, mm-hmm. yeah. So I guess I was just thinking.
Well,
Go ahead, Zoe.
Oh, I have a question for Zoe.
Oh, go ahead.
I'm so happy to know that you are in the school teaching children, because I love to teach children as well. Can you tell us what kind of dishes you were introducing to them that they were cooking?
I have from salmon dishes to chicken, and then a variety of different vegetables. I kind of like to rotate it, because sometimes the children mm-hmm. see me multiple times throughout their school, you know, their elementary years. So if I can add a new recipe or new creativity to their mm-hmm. plate, their creations at home, I like to do that. So it's always a variety where you're adding mm-hmm. the proteins, vegetables, and grain. Mm-hmm. In some of the cases, if we have some time, we'll do like a fruit kind of creation mm-hmm. of sort. But it's basically based off of those three, the protein, grains, and vegetables.
Mm-hmm.
And of course,
mm-hmm.
you know, it's talking about olive oil, also the omegas, because
yes.
many people don't realize that olive oil offers such an abundance
mm-hmm.
of omegas.
Mm-hmm.
Absolutely.
And in fact, when we harvest our olive oil, we harvest it at the younger age of the olive, because the younger the olive it is, the more nutritious it is. When it, and you can still make cold press, extra virgin, all those wonderful things, but when you process it at a later stage, the nutrients have been depleted to, you mm-hmm. know, to be more plump of an olive, to make more oil, you know. So
mm-hmm.
there's all these other things that we think about in our agriculture or our foods is harvest at nutrition. You know, when is the highest peak
mm-hmm.
for nutritional quality?
Mm-hmm. Mm-hmm.
So that's a big thing for the kids. And Kathleen, I wanted to touch on one thing where you're saying on mass production and things that nobody ever goes hungry. There is something that when we don't know where our food comes from, we tend to be a little bit more, I want to say, and forgive me if I say this wrong, wasteful,
mm-hmm.
because we don't know the connection. We don't have that connection. So, yes, we may not finish our meal that's on the plate, you know, where if you knew that rice, where it came from, and the difficulty it was for a family to harvest, you would, like in many of the Asian families, they say every kernel of rice has to be gone
mm-hmm.
because of
mm-hmm.
the difficulty.
Mm-hmm. How hard it is to grow it and to harvest it. And yes,
mm-hmm.
yes, yes, yes. I also think, you know, when I think, Zoe, and soon I'll have to say goodbye, because I see we have Nyaboni Gott, who is another one of our community call-in guests, is holding. So we'll get to you soon, Nyaboni. But I was thinking that the time that children spend in the kitchen with their parents, even if they're not talking about great issues, you know, they're just talking about, I need a cup of sugar, you know, or, you know, get the milk out of the, that there's just this relaxed time together that has to be really healthy. You know what I mean? Just kind of, in other words, you're not sitting down and talking about a problem like, well, why aren't you doing better in school? Or why did you have a fight with your brother? Or you're just, you know, together in a kind of calm and productive way. And I have a feeling that that must be really good for kids and parents to have that kind of experience together. What do you think?
It's an icebreaker as
mm-hmm.
well. I
mm-hmm.
feel,
yes.
you know, the more time you spend time with your children, you'll probably share something that happened with you at work. They'll share something,
mm-hmm.
you know, eventually this becomes, and in a way as well, if there's something that you could prevent. You know, maybe you didn't know that your child was being bullied, and then they break down after the third time cooking with you and say, Mom, Dad, this happened, you know, or something like that.
Mm-hmm.
So it's very important, because it's like gaining each other's trust in a way, even though you know you love and you trust your child and you're there for them 100%. But they may not feel it because there's different stages and ages
mm-hmm.
of things that are happening.
Yeah, yeah. So mm-hmm. an icebreaker, making a place for the conversation to come up, or the worry or the fear or something like that to come up. So, well, Zoe, we have to say goodbye, but I want to say thank
holidays.
You. Yes, happy holidays.
Yeah, thank you. And I hope, and I'm excited to hear in the near future, we'll be able to make some films of what we're doing at the schools or do this in a private setting and amplify this beautiful message of food is life and food is healing. And dear Judith Moo, I wish you and your classmates
yes.
all the very best.
Thank you.
There, and thank you for all the love that you guys both put in our community. Have a great day.
Thank you,
always.
Zoe.
Great. Thank you so much, Zoe. And okay. we're going to take a tiny break right now and come right back. You're listening to Hometown Alaska. I'm your host, Kathleen McCoy, with my co-host, Judith Mack.
You're listening to Hometown Alaska on Alaska Public Media. You can find Hometown Alaska on alaskapublic.org or wherever you get your podcasts.
Welcome back to Hometown Alaska. I'm your host, Kathleen McCoy, and sharing the duties today with a pop-up co-host, Judith Mack, who's a chef and knows a lot about food. And I have benefited from being her friend and going to grocery stores with her and going to the Hmong Saturday market over at Centennial Park and having just delicious barbecued food and papaya salad. I'm going to just share our phone numbers. I hope there's folks out there that are thinking, oh, I remember my aunt used to always bring this dish to, you know, or I learned how to make this and now I make it for my children. I don't know. Maybe there's some stories out there that folks would like to share. So here in Anchorage, it's 550-8433. And we can take statewide calls from 1-888-353-5752 or email us at hometown@alaskapublic.org. So, Judith, did you grow up in the kitchen at your mother's knee, or did you develop
this? Yes, I did.
You did?
Yes. It was mostly baking, but my mother went back to work, and then I had to make the dinners. So I just learned to do that, and I would learn to read a recipe. And I've always just been very interested in cooking. And when I moved to Hawaii in my 20s, I was introduced to a lot of different Asian foods. So that really sparked my interest in Japanese, Chinese, Thai cuisine. And Southeast Asian, I love that cuisine. And I love cuisines from all over the world. I'm very interested in different cuisines.
Mm-hmm. Well, I would like to welcome Naiboni Gott. Hello, Naiboni.
Hi, Kathleen and Judith.
Hi there, boy.
So glad to have you. And I know that it was probably hard to break away. I know you're working. But were you able to listen to any of the other guests? You know, I'm not exactly sure. You and I talked before the show, and you embraced this idea really fully. But I never really explored a particular story with you. So I'm just going to sort of stay open and listen to what you have to say about this idea of food being love and also maybe healing and maybe giving us the strength to reach out to things that are hard for us. So I don't know. Actually, I should tell our guests, I found a really wonderful bio of you, Naiboni, from UAA. It's a couple years old. I think you graduated in 2019 with a health sciences degree, but you received a Student Diversity Award scholarship. And because it sounds from what I read in this little biographical sketch of you that you went to UAA with the idea of health sciences in mind, but actually really developed this sense of community connection. And so you were born in Sudan but raised in the U.S., and we're lucky that we have you here in Alaska. So talk to me about food and why you think it's important in a community that food be a part of how people gather.
Yeah, well, thank you for having me. And I was able to tune in a little bit, and it's just so warming. Like, my heart is like filled with so much joy from hearing from the other, from Zoe and Omid. And, you know, I've always been fascinated with just the topic of food and food security and how culture plays a role and just the ability to feel satisfied, whether that's, from how food is prepared to who's, preparing it. In my own culture, like, food is a central part, and just as simple as, if you have a guest over, you should be able to provide a drink or, some food and
nourishment.
But as Zoe just mentioned before, food is a connector, and it's really an identity that's filled with so much memory and stories, whether that's good or bad. Really believe that food is a way to the heart. And during the pandemic, I have had the opportunity to see that unfold in many ways. And there's a particular group of which Ms. Shirley is connected to, of women in the community. And we've built really a great bond around just simply sitting down and having a cup of tea, having a shared dish, and we prepare it together. It's sort of like this, like an afternoon or an evening that we spend. And, we're embracing laughter and hearing each other's stories. And just the remembrance around, how spices are used or how food is cooked in a particular way. And, in this particular group, we're all from different countries. We're all immigrants and refugees. And it's funny because, when we go down to sit and enjoy this meal that we just prepared, the conversation is like in four different languages.
Wow.
You can hear that in the room. And it's never really an offense, or it doesn't break us up or segment, but it's really warming to see that we've been able to make a connection through food, and a deeper appreciation for each other. And sometimes as we're talking or, these different languages are used, it's often we're talking about the same thing. And if it's around like a particular recipe that someone's describing, we find a commonality within it and say, I've heard of that before. My mother used to make this, or my aunt used to make this, and it's called something different, but it's the same, but different. And I really appreciate just, food is a connector. And I know this time is really hard for people because it is filled with so much emotion and memories, and you're reminded that of someone based on a missing dish at the table, or it's just and sometimes it's also a way to cope and to remember people and places.
I'm going to read this one quote. I read a lot of things about food and sort of to get ready for the show. And one of the writers I was looking, and she's a cook, MFK Fisher. And this is just a short quote that I think speaks to what Nyaboni's saying and what we've heard from the other guests. But here she is. This is from her book, The Gastronomical Me. And it's just a short quote. She says, "But I still think that one of the pleasantest of all emotions is to know that I, with my brain and my hands, have nourished my beloved few, that I have concocted a stew or a story, a rarity or a plain dish to sustain them truly against the hungers of the world." And I think that's that gets at that giving, you know, let me give you, mm-hmm. you know, it's a cruel world out there. We have a lot of work to do. It's tough. There's disappointments. There's, you know, desperation in some corners. But here's some nourishment to go out and be able mm-hmm. to do what you do. And I think that's really lovely. And I've, you know, had the experience in my own family of being nourished by good food, you know, a birthday party or a just coming together to celebrate something. And I don't know, it is so fundamental and critical to have those experiences to give you the energy to go on, you know? So,
yes. And being the chef, the cook, there's really nothing more pleasurable than having people appreciate your cooking. Mm-hmm. I mean, that is the goal. When you make a beautiful meal and everybody loves it, mm-hmm. that is so pleasing to mm-hmm. the person cooking.
It's like you threw a ball and it was caught.
Yes.
You spent all these hours in the kitchen and what you did was appreciated and loved. And also
absolutely.
You see in their faces the satisfaction, you know, the comfort.
Mm-hmm.
Yeah.
Absolutely.
Yeah. I have one more quote. Would you guys mind if I read one more?
No.
Okay. This is again M.F.K. Fisher, but it's a different book called The Art of Eating. And she says, it seems to me that our three basic needs for food and security and love are so mixed and mingled and entwined that we cannot think of one without the other. So it happens that when I write of hunger, I am really writing about love and the hunger for it and warmth mm-hmm. and the love of it and the hunger for it. And then the warmth and richness and fine reality of hunger satisfied. And it is all one. So again, that's the cook, you know, seeing that she was able to nourish, I guess. And I don't know, this is so ancient. I think it must be ancient, you know, this idea of caring, yes. caring for children, caring for family, you know, with food. So I don't know, it's just, it's actually a tool that's right there for us in terms of connecting and overcoming, you know, instead of seeing the differences, looking more for the similarities and, you know, then being able to be open to more ideas, things that maybe were putting us off, maybe with, you know, a nice meal, we can consider them. I think I did some mm-hmm. reading about that after you have eaten. Actually, oh, yes, that's right. The PBS had done a series on, it was called Food is Love, and the chef talked about a little bit about why he valued this, and I'm just going to just read this really quick quote where he is explaining why food is love. And he says, when you put food on the table and break bread, you become a peacemaker. I've always said that even though as people we are different, we all need to eat. And when you have something good to eat, when you break bread and have a nice glass of wine and a wonderful meal, it brings you together. You're open to new ideas and other people's ideas and suggestions. And it's a form of love. I've always believed that when people enjoy their dinner together, it opens up their hearts to new ideas and to new cultures. I mean, just that mm-hmm. that relaxation and this being satiated and being open.
Mm-hmm. Yes, I totally agree.
Mm-hmm. Yeah. I don't know. Let me see. We only have a couple minutes left, but I'm going to say, Niaboni, is there anything you want to leave our listeners with? And then we'll say goodbye, and Judith and I will just, you know, wax poetic here at the end.
Yeah, I don't necessarily. I appreciate your, you know, what Judith said earlier about, you know, you don't necessarily have to be a good cook. You just have to be able to read a recipe.
Mm-hmm.
And for the longest, I always felt guilty because, you know, being raised in the U.S., I don't necessarily know how to make all of my cultural dishes
mm-hmm.
Just because you learn those things at a younger age, and I just had a different life journey here, but it's never too late. And with this group, and as I continue to immerse myself in various cultures and people, I have an opportunity to learn and pick those things up. So I appreciate you you all and putting the show together.
Oh, yes. Thank you. I really was wanting something that would be nourishing. Yeah, I couldn't serve food over the air, but at least we could talk about it. So, so Niaboni, thank you so much. I know you're
yes.
busy.
Thank
I know you're
you.
At the I think a health education specialist, and you work at the Anchorage Literacy Project. You're very involved in the community, and we thank you for everything you do, and thank you for sharing your thoughts about food with us today.
Thank you.
Thank you so much.
Yeah. So, Judith, what do you think? Do you feel hungry now that we've talked about food for an hour?
Well, it's just so interesting thinking about cultural food when I was thinking about this program and some of the things with Christmas Eve coming up.
Mm-hmm.
There's traditions on Christmas Eve that I'm sure other cultures have. I know we mostly ate seafood in our Italian family. My mother made bacalà, which is salted cod. And it was, you know, it's just what you did every Christmas Eve. You had either the Feast of the Seven Fishes, which my family didn't do, but many Italian Americans do that, or just always have something seafood for Christmas Eve. So just those traditions that you do year after year after year, they're so comforting.
Mm-hmm, mm-hmm.
And it's so familiar.
Right. And when you say seven fishes, can you name the seven fishes?
Well, it's the Feast of the Seven Fishes. It's an Italian-American custom that started about the 1900s. And it's sort of related to the Catholic doctrine, where you don't eat meat, you know, you fast certain times. And the fishes that you serve must always be an odd number of fishes. So some examples are the bacalà, which is a salted cod, shrimp, mussels, clams, octopus, prepared all different ways. Mm. So it doesn't necessarily have to be seven, but it has to be an odd number.
Oh, interesting. Yeah.
Mm-hmm.
I did not know about that. I have heard of the tradition of eating seafood on Christmas Eve. I know it worked for years at the Daily News, and there was Kim Severson was a food writer there. She did a lot of other things.
Right.
She was a hard
mm-hmm.
news writer, but she also loved food. And I remember her writing a piece about her, you know, Christmas Eve dinner and the seafood. I think these, you know, as time passes and maybe we lose people or we lose a job or we go through COVID and there's all this mm-hmm. disruption and change, some of these things that we come back to kind of give us an anchor, you know, and stop the free fall maybe that we're mm-hmm. having with our sensibilities and our fears for the future. And this can kind of console us. And really, that was the idea of this show, to be a bit of a consolation mm-hmm. for the tough times that we have gone through. And, you know, I don't know if they're tougher than other times. To me, they seem that way. But I bet if I talk to my parents in the 60s, they were like, oh, the world is coming apart at the seams. So, you know, who knows if it's worse, you know, or it just seems worse or more disruptive or more things pulling us apart than pulling us together. But I was hopeful that food would be a way for people to, I don't know, feel somewhat restored.
Yes. Well, I think tradition is very comforting. So you may only do this once a year, but this is what we do once a year. And it's just very comforting, I think, in my situation and probably other people's situation as well.
Mm-hmm. Yeah. I'm just going to share a few other quotes that made me laugh. Like, this one is from Nora Ephron about food and falling in love. I've made a lot of mistakes falling in love and regretted most of them, but never the potatoes that went with them. Anyway, Judith, that's the sound of the end of our hour.
Okay, thank you, Kathleen. It was delightful. I really appreciate you inviting me.
Oh, and I loved having you. Thank you so much. So thank you, Judith Mack, my pop-up co-host and chef. And also to Omid Rahmanian, Zoe Marudis, and Nayaboni Gat, who shared their feelings and emotions about what food can do, how it can help us. This closes out our Hometown Alaska programs for 2021. We're on a holiday through the new year. I will be back as your host on January 24th when we talk with local nonprofits working to keep Alaskans healthy. Find us on the web at alaskapublic.org. Tobin Shelby was our audio engineer. Thanks for joining us today on Hometown Alaska.
Hometown Alaska is a production of Alaska Public Media, which is solely responsible for its content. Views expressed are those of the participants and not necessarily those of Alaska Public Media, this station, or its underwriters. Hometown Alaska's theme song, Lead Dog, is by Kevin Barnett from Eagle River. Learn more about Hometown Alaska and listen online at alaskapublic.org. This is Alaska Public Media.